wave it back.
I knew it.
Well, he's got all that rock star fame now. All right. Hello.
Man.
See, don't you love it when I see I hold little tidbits back to tell you just before we go on the air, just to put a smile on your face, Sarah Dillon.
It's those reality shows. They doom a relationship.
Bad for you. Hello. It is 28 seconds after the hour of 12 in this, the month of July, in the year of our Lord, 2006.
Thank you for coming along, making a part of your listening day, live from the Carol.
Hello. What the hell was that?
I don't know.
I thought, okay, at least it wasn't my headphones.
Not to find me.
Yeah, but, okay, thank you. Here's what the world sounds like to Tim Riley.
So anyway, we're on the show today. We're going to be going to Tim Riley in the City News.
And with just like a huge high-pitched sort of in the background the whole time. We call that having the Townsend. Now it's gone. Okay, that wasn't my headphones or my ears just now. Like, my microphone was crackling on me, wasn't it? Hello. With that, don't you hate that when you can't make it, do it again? For like 5 seconds, I was speaking.
Now everybody's going to think they have trouble with their microphone.
All right. I'm afraid to touch anything. I'm not going to start again. Now I'm all thrown off. God damn it. Well, it's 2006, and hello there. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. If you'd like to interact with us electronically today, by God, you can do it. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. It is Tuesday, and welcome to day 12. Coming up today, we have, it's a fantastic Darwin watch. We have a double snuff watch. It was going to be a single snuff watch yesterday, but then we were late. We didn't get to the Hooters guy. So I'm just going to give away, that's the spoiler. The Hooters guy died. But it's been overshadowed by somebody bigger and more important. So we'll get to both of those. Double snuff watch coming up today. Bush watch. We have a geek watch?
We do, yes.
Geek watch coming up today. We have a top five rock star supernova related top five today. Top five songs about becoming a rock and roll star. Those are coming up later on. And we're supposed to have David Cassidy at 1:15. And let me just tell you that mere words cannot express how excited Scotty J has been.
It's ridiculous.
It really is like Michael Bolton-esque, I celebrate the guy's entire catalog level of excitement. Scotty's been walking around just bursting out of his own skin for the last 2, 3, 4 days. All just pumped up and constantly lecturing me, by the way, that I do not appreciate the magic of the man.
I just got the lecture this morning. When he wasn't sure if he was going to be able to call, you know, during the show, I'm like, Scotty, come on, he'll call. He's like, you don't understand how famous he is.
That's so lame, isn't it? You don't understand. This is what I got this morning. And we'll tell you why this matters here in a minute.
Which is the sweetest thing ever.
It really is sort of cute. It's
because somebody has to take this seriously.
It really is sort of endearing. It's just in relentless denial.
Then we may be wrong.
Firmly, we're not.
They can't keep enough David Cassidy products on the shelves.
It is sort of charming how he's relentlessly rooted in the past. But completely blinded by his love for David Cassidy. We'll talk in a minute about why this is now germane again. But this is the comment I got from him this morning, because he was going on and on about, no, David, it's Cassidy, man. He's the consummate showman. And I said, yeah, you know, whatever. And I was busy doing some other things. I was sort of preoccupied. I was busy ogling the Page 3 girl and the sun. And he was going on in my ear about David Cassidy, and I sort of waved him away. I gave him sort of a little, yeah, okay, you know, we'll talk about it later. It's not a big deal. And he stopped, and he sort of took a step back from me, and he said, Rick, this is David Cassidy we're talking about. And then he just sort of sat there, and he kind of nodded his head at me with like the, yeah, think about that one. And then he walked off, and that was it. So it really is kind of fascinating and charming. So we'll talk about that.
I'd like to know what happened to the little girl who used to play the tambourine on the Partridge Family. Who is she and what became of her?
Susan Day?
No, there was a little girl in the background, wasn't there, hitting a tambourine?
She like a pseudo-Partridge?
She was. Could have been.
How many kids? Can I just tell you this right now, that I never really watched the Partridge Family. That's kind of that's the real retarded irony of the whole thing about booking David Cassidy on this program, is the thing that he is the most famous for, the thing that little girls who are now aged housefraus all over the world loved him for, is the thing that I never even watched. I think I watched like an episode and a half of the Partridge Family, and that was it, man. Because I just couldn't, I just couldn't take it. I like Shirley Jones a lot. Boy, she's still hot. Let me tell you, she's like 100 years old, but she's still beautiful.
Yep.
When is the last time anybody here watched The Music Man? You go back and watch The Music Man with Shirley Jones, and who's the guy? Who's the guy in The Music Man?
I don't remember.
The guy who plays Professor Thaddeus T. Farnsworth, or whatever the hell his name is. You know, the guy who comes to town with the... Folks, we've got trouble right here in River City. That's trouble with a capital T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool. I forget his name, but Shirley Jones, man, and she plays the sort of a prude, virgin, tight-ass librarian, and she's just as hot as you could possibly imagine. But that wasn't enough to keep me watching The Partridge Family. And even at my tender age, it just seemed a little too hippie-ish. It was a little too, come on, let's all hug, and this is the dawning of the age of Aquarius or whatever. So I quit watching. So when I say that I have nothing to talk to David Cassidy about, I don't mean the typical kind of, like, I have nothing other than the Partridge Family. I mean, I have nothing. I don't even have Partridge Family questions to fall back on. So, but it may not matter for reasons that we'll describe here in a while. We're joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon, who looks fantastic, by the way.
Thank you. I have to say, it's
sort of a crapshoot with all of us here today, with all of us who are not Tim, because Tim is really the only one sometimes who I think actually bothers to stop by the bathroom and brush his hair and put on something that's not dirty. The rest of us just reached a level of laissez-faire where we just don't even care about it. Sometimes we're wearing clean clothing, sometimes we're not. It really doesn't have anything to do with effort on our part. It's just whatever happens to be close by when we roll out of bed in the morning. You know what I mean?
True.
Whatever's within arm's reach and doesn't actually have flies circling overhead is what we put on.
Ew.
No, and then, you know, if we're going to go out later on, you shower for that. So this room stinks anyway.
I had to get ready. I did one of those things where I'm not going to be able to go home, so I had to get ready for work and then for going out later.
Yeah, it's because nothing we do is going to make this room smell any better. This room is, you know what it is? This room is sort of like, it's like having a schwitz, you know, back in the, it's one big sauna. Like you expect Steve Lawrence and
it's not fitting for David Cassidy.
Yes. Peter Lawford sitting in here. So there's just no point. Getting dressed up to come to work here in this room is sort of like getting dressed up to go work at a construction site or a sawmill. There's that place where they turn sewage into air that the astronauts can drink. That's what this is. But Sarah is going to, what is it, a bachelorette party?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so...
This starts at 5.
And who's going to be... Are these all jobless friends of yours?
No, they all have jobs. I don't really know how this is going to work.
All right. And what are you in charge of? Oh, you probably can't describe on the air what you're in charge of getting. Is this inflatable phallus?
Yes, I'm not in charge of it, but I think everyone else...
You just volunteered.
Exactly. I think everyone else has too much tact to buy something like that, whereas I'm going to buy the biggest one I can find.
Excellent. There you go. Mm. And plus, now you did a photo shoot yesterday.
Yeah.
Can we talk about that? Is that a thing? Because you do now. In fact, Joni would probably... I mean, it's not like a... This is not for consideration or compensation, but it's like a retro, like a rockabilly hipster kind of store.
Yeah. It's owned by this woman who runs a baby girl boutique, but she has a bunch of different designers who work, and they all put their stuff on her website.
And so the deal is that you go and you model, and this is sort of like when you act in a film. Isn't it Cameron Diaz that has that? When you act in a movie and you get to keep the clothing?
Yeah.
It's like in your contract.
Nice.
So you've got... It's one of those things that really only you could make work, where it's like it's a camouflage dress with pink pistols stitched into it and like little pink bows on the shoulder straps. And I know I'm making it sound like something hideous, but it's really not. You really do look fantastic.
Thank you.
Even by your standards, because you are put together well, as the British say. But you
that
do look fantastic
very nice
today.
Of you. Thank
so
you.
There you go. And Tim Riley's working on the following stories today at the AM 970 City Desk.
The terrorist who killed an Oregon soldier in Iraq has himself been killed. The pilot killed in the air show after crashing into a house survived a similar crash 17 years ago.
Is it true that guy was actually in charge of investigating air crashes?
He represented plane crash victims in legal cases.
All right, there you go. So cue the ironic tag.
An Oregon Zoo peacock allegedly attacks a child for taking its candy. Macaulay Culkin finds a way out of war-torn Israel as thousands of Americans wait to be rescued. And the government has yet to respond.
Okay. Lisa Goddard will be talking to us live from Jerusalem later on. Also, CNN radio correspondent Ed McCarthy about... There was something that seemed really interesting at the time. Wait. Oh, yeah, because Ralph Reed and that Cynthia McKinney woman who punched the cop, allegedly.
Yeah.
Was she even convicted of that? I can't even remember.
No.
Yeah, she probably did. Anyway, but it's going to be the best primary day ever. Ralph Reed and Cynthia McKinney. It's one of those days where you just, if you work at CNN, you don't need to get out of bed early. You don't even need to shave. You just wander over the phone and pick it up and start talking about Ralph Reed. And Jim Roop will be here, be on the phone with us later on. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. We've already got people. What is people calling in about? Somebody's calling about Storm. Yeah, we'll talk about that as well. Oh, yeah, and tonight is Rockstar Supernova, which you will not be able to watch. So are you even able to tape it?
Hopefully I can.
All right. Because otherwise you're going to come in tomorrow and you're not going to know what's going on.
Well, they put it on the internet too, right?
That's it. Well, they, because on YouTube I know that you can watch the individual performances. And then at the Rockstar... That Rockstar Supernova site, which is like the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. God help me. It's the worst website. And look, I don't mean any disrespect. I don't mean to bust on anybody whose job is putting that together. I'm not an artist. I don't know nothing about nothing. But that is the... If I have to wait for that stupid tattoo thing to load one more time, I'm going to throw my computer out the window. Anyway.
Kids like it.
No, the kids don't like it. The kids think it's retarded. This is like you go to that the 970.am page. It's like my page or Sarah's or Tim's. You go to the page. There's no shockwave anything. There's no flash anything. That's all. People hate that. There's no point to it at all. All it is, it's just tedious and irritating. Anyway, but you're going to be at the bachelorette party, so I'm just going to stay home then. I can't go,
don't have to go out.
I can't go out in public. No, you're like my flak jacket. I can't go because then at awkward moments in the conversation, when I'm under caffeinated and unable to hold any sort of rapport with people, you can sort of pick up the conversational slack. And people are always more interested in talking to you anyway.
No, they're not. Well, they try to talk to you, and then you kind of grunt at them, and then I end up talking to them since you won't.
That's not true. You're making me sound like
maybe you need to write like a monologue, and then everyone will be satisfied. By the time it's done, you won't have to say anything else.
You're not a jerk. You're just awkward.
I'm not a jerk. I just don't know what I'm doing. I'm just useless. And so forth. All right. Well, I had some observation to make about something or other, but let's screw it. Let's go to the city desk. Here's Tim Riley.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour. And now, from the city desk, Tim Riley.
From high atop the bottom of the Coin Tower in downtown Portland, Oregon, CBS presents the City Desk Newsbeat. Tim Riley reporting our top story. The pilot killed in that plane crash at the Hillsboro Air Show survived a similar crash 17 years ago. Robert Guilford, who was a 73-year-old California attorney, flew a World War II jet in 1989 and suddenly had engine failure and crashed into a house in Santa Monica, California. He and his wife were the only ones injured. He was a veteran pilot.
How many houses are you allowed to hit before they decide that maybe you shouldn't be flying anymore?
Two.
Okay.
I think that's self-explanatory. He won't be flying.
That's Tim Riley who said that. And then I laughed.
So, as ironic as this sounds, he represented plane crash victims in legal cases.
I'm not sure. Is that actually ironic or not? Wait, hold on. Let me figure this out. So he represented plane crash victims and then was himself a plane crash victim.
Yes.
Linguistically speaking, is that ironic?
I would assume so, yes.
I can never tell. Here's the problem with that Alanis Morissette song, and I swear to God I'm not going to start carping about it again because I can already see Sarah's brain tuning out. But can you turn to that Lycus channel? I'm hearing that.
It's off.
Really? Where's that hiss coming from? There we go.
There is no hiss.
No?
It's weird. It's up. Oh, I guess the bulbs burned out.
Oh,
yes.
We're very classy here.
That's why I never...
We can't have any more bulbs because we burned too many out.
Yes. HR is going to... If these bulbs continue to vanish, we will take away all the lights in the building on Friday.
If these bulbs don't work, neither can you.
By the way, I should tell you that this morning, the living section of the Oregonian was... Because we have a copy of the Oregonian that arrives for us every day. The living section of the Oregonian was stolen this morning. So I'll be waiting for the memo from HR saying that... As of Monday, we're never again going to have a newspaper because someone one time stole part of one.
I have one.
I have one, too. I went and stole it from somebody else. Did you hear that? Me, Rick Emerson. I stole it from someone else.
So if two people steal the same thing, who gets punished?
I think it'll be you.
Okay.
All right. In any event, we could probably blame... Let's blame Smokey for it, though.
Okay.
All right. No, here's my point. is that the problem with that Alanis Morissette song is it raised the cultural awareness of a whole problem that had been plaguing us for a long time, which is the incorrect use of the word ironic. Now, I'm not going to rehash the whole thing again because I did it like 9 years ago when that song came out, and everybody knows what I'm talking about. But I'm just saying, you know what it is? The use of the word ironic is like the use of the word literally. It, literally is a word that is incorrectly used like 90% of the time. People will go, no, 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 dude, I literally died with laughter. See, here's the thing. That's not true because you didn't die of laughter. When people say literally, they mean figuratively. When people say, no, literally, she's so crazy, she's from another planet, which is just retarded. It is wrong. So when you say literally, just stop and say figuratively instead, because you'll be right like 90% of the time. The thing with ironic is that you were allowed to misuse that and to use it incorrectly and just be screwing it because nobody noticed. But starting about 10 years ago, everybody notices now. So now I'm all hypersensitive about whether it's being used correctly or not. So if the guy's job was to investigate airline crashes or airplane crashes, yes, and that he himself died in an airplane crash, mm-hmm, I don't believe that's technically ironic. I do believe it is coincidental and odd, though. I believe that's the thing. I believe it is interesting and perhaps poignant.
Should I apologize like Dan Rather then?
Yes. Yes.
I am so sorry.
Please do. All right.
I feel like we've been watching C-SPAN 2.
Book talk. All right. Well, anyway, so he's dead.
So there he is.
Yeah, he has been.
So apparently, you're allowed like a one house sort of a buy. That is sort of a freebie. After that, though, they really have to, like that line from Pushing Tin, you've had two things in one day. You're allowed three in 2 years. You're not going to let you go. Apparently, it's everybody's entitled to one house.
Meanwhile, the Jordanian who killed two U.S. soldiers last month was fatally wounded in a crash with security forces and has died. He was one of the ones who killed Private First Class Thomas Tucker of Madras, Oregon, and Private First Class Christian Maneka of Houston.
Wait, so he was one of the guys who killed the two?
Yeah.
How do we know that?
They do, I guess, somehow.
Is it one of the? No, I'm not saying he didn't, but I'm saying, is he one of those, I take responsibility for the death of whatever, one of those?
Yeah.
Nitwits. Mm-hmm. And he's dead?
He's dead.
Well, that's good.
So.
Did he die slowly and painfully?
We hope so.
Okay.
Time for the Bushwatch.
Here's your Bushwatch.
Resident, kind of in charge, he's got the whole country saying, that's my bush. Life is hard, that's a price of fame, when you're president, everyone knows your name. Hey, what's that thing? It's my bush. I can't believe he's actually in the White House. That's our man. That's my bush.
British Prime Minister Tony Blair was roundly mocked as a U.S. poodle after an off-the-cuff chat with President Bush, which was accidentally broadcast. Blair and Bush were enjoying gossip over lunch. Actually, it was Bush who was enjoying lunch with talking with his mouth open while chewing.
This is the one where he said Hezbollah needs to knock this S off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can see the food in his mouth. Barbara did a terrible job of towel-rearing with this guy. And Tony Bush is standing there watching him eat with a mouthful of food. Anyway, they were enjoying gossip, unaware that the microphone was on. Breaking with diplomatic formality, Bush hailed Blair, his closest European ally, with the words, "Yo, Blair." His solution to the Middle East crisis with Syria, that we should press his bullet to stop doing this, you know what. The Bush media poured over the text of the conversation, seeing it cast Blair as a subservient role, and show the unequal nature of Britain's much-vaunted special relationship with the U.S. "Yo, Bush," started treating our prime minister with respect, says the popular daily tabloid, the Daily Mirror. The broadcast chat reinforces the damaging image of Blair as one of the U.S. president's poodles.
Well, you're talking
about the president doesn't have a poodle.
Now, you talk about a guy that had such he was so popular for so long. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. You know what it is? That's what my wife calls the bad boyfriend syndrome. You know what I mean? If you got embarrassing parents or you've got embarrassing siblings or whatever, there's nothing you can do about that because you did not select them. But if you have an embarrassing wife, husband, boyfriend, or girlfriend, that's like the worst thing on earth because that implies that that out of the whole lineup, out of all the people and all the gin joints on earth, you picked that person to be with. And that's the problem with Bush and Blair. Blair has had numerous opportunities just to sort of bail on this whole ally-ship with the United States, and he's just failed to do so at every opportunity, which is why, man, you know, I was watching the other day with Alan Rickman Hugh Grant is Love Actually. There's that whole sequence, which is clearly meant to be like a big finger in the eye of Tony Blair about the being Bush's lapdog, which he obviously is.
Meanwhile, the president will address the NAACP this week, pressed why he's doing so.
Now, that deserves the ironic
Tony
tag.
Snow says because he wants to.
Uh-huh. He wants to because I think there's a moment of opportunity here. I think the president wants to make the argument that, that he has had a career that reflects a strong commitment to civil rights.
Maybe he just figures, you know, while he can just try to get that 2% black approval rate down to zero. You know, just you know, wipe the slate clean. Just, you know, just take care of it once and for all.
The president has less in common with colored folks.
To talk about some of the commonalities he has with members of the NAACP. Yes, they have political disagreements also.
What commonalities? What
there were 5 seconds worth, apparently. It already ended before you finished your thought.
Man.
Before you finished that thought.
Where's Helen Thomas with the follow-up question? I want to know right now what George W. Bush has in common with the members of the NAACP.
To talk about some of the commonalities he has with members of the NAACP. Yes, they have political disagreements also.
Well, I guess they're all carbon-based.
Mm.
All right, here's Tim Riley.
And that is the Bush Watch.
There's your Bush Watch.
He's the president, residence is kind of in charge. He's got the whole country saying, that's my bird.
Yeah. I swear to God, I'm getting David Cassidy questions emailed to me.
Good.
Let's see. This is great. These emails are no longer, they're not even to me to be rephrased. They're actually just questions directly to David Cassidy, such as, so your brother Patrick has had considerable, Patrick Cassidy?
I believe so. That's the third one.
Oh, he's him, the one that, he's the shimp.
Sean and whatever his name is.
He's the Zeppo of the Cassidy family. Your brother, Patrick, who no one has ever heard of until just now, has had considerable success in theater, both on Broadway and the touring circuit.
That may be true, but we don't know.
Is theater something you have done or would consider doing? Also, is your chest muscly and shaved? Okay, fantastic. P.S. Shirley Jones was also in the lead. It was the lead in Oklahoma. She looked hot. And, you know, Oklahoma is a movie I've never seen. And Lara keeps trying to make me see it because she's got, like, all chicks. She's got a thing for musicals. Mm-hmm. And I've resisted. Because it's like I don't even feel like I need to see. Just like Sarah doesn't need to see Glengarry Glen Ross because after working with me for years, she probably feels like she's seen it 100 times. I don't really think I need to see Oklahoma because I can sing all of the goddamn songs already just before living with Lara. It's like the pajama game. Like, it was making me see the pajama game was actually just redundant because I was already able to sing Hernando's Hideaway, like, word for word. The pajama game, which I'm apparently being dragged to Manhattan to see on Broadway, you know, like, sometime in the next year. That'll be fun. Here's Tim Riley.
The House today rejected a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage, ending another year of congressional debate. It was a 236 to 187 vote. The U.S. military is using huge CH-53C Stallion helicopters to lift Americans out of war-torn Lebanon. Major Ian Stone is a Marine reservist who had experience with this particular type of chopper. He says there are a couple of things that make the CH-53 the choice for such an operation.
One, it's one of the few helicopters that have 3 gas turbine jet engines on board, making it very, very powerful and fast. And number two, it has the capability to aerial refuel.
Major Stone outlines how many people can be transported on this chopper.
The interior of the aircraft is so large, you could easily fit 50 people with a bag each inside of the aircraft. It's capable of a max weight of 69,750 pounds.
Which would be like a dozen women who live in the suburbs.
Okay. There you go. To Tim Riley. Robert Preston was the guy in The Music Man.
Oh.
He was also in something else, wasn't he? Well, I guess that's probably true, but I just don't remember what. And Ron Howard was the little kid. So there you go. There's all your Music Man questions answered for you. Do we have the break? Coming up around the corner, Lisa Goddard from CNN Radio. She is broadcasting from Jerusalem. We also got top 5 songs about becoming a rock and roll star later on. And we'll do a double snuff watch. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show live from Portland on AM 970. Solid State Radio. Don't go anywhere. That's like I'd never seen Citizen Kane until a few years ago. And then I just, like, I finally rented it out of guilt. You know what I mean? Like a sense of, well, I guess I gotta watch it. Like, eventually they were gonna come kick me out of the country if I hadn't seen it. I've still never seen Casablanca. I know, see that, but you can't tell people that, because then they give you the stink eye. All right, it's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. 970. Coming up later.
I had
on.
To because I used to live next to the Van Nuys Airport. Okay. Which is where the final scene is filmed.
All the his looking at you. This is the beginning of a beautiful friendship or
it's
whatever.
It's right between Tommy's, the Keebler, and the Budweiser plant.
Sounds like an epicenter of culture,
yeah,
to be sure. Moving from one epicenter to another, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, live from Jerusalem, CNN radio correspondent and woman of the world, Lisa Goddard. How are you, Lisa?
Hello, I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. I know that you're a real time crunch here. So, well, I guess...
A little bit.
First of all, there's two things. You'll be happy to know that Macaulay Culkin has fled Israel. He is out. No, he is.
I feel a lot better now.
He is
for my
out,
own personal safety.
He is out
in Israel
of danger. Macaulay Culkin is safe. He is no longer under any threat of injury. I want to repeat. Macaulay Culkin is safe.
He's an American treasure.
Really, truer words were never spoken. So, I mean, it seems like it on the one hand, it seems like things in Israel right now, they probably in the whole region, are changing every 5 minutes. On the other hand, they're not really changing because it is an escalation of the same thing that's been building and recurring every few months, every few years, forever. What's the latest there as of now?
You know, I could go over the, you know, who threw what missiles and what rockets at who, and I can definitely get into that today, but I really think the big story today is that exactly what you said, this is now becoming a routine. We're in day 7 of Israeli bombardment of southern Lebanon, and we have seen again today rockets coming out of Hezbollah, killing one man in the Israeli town of Nasiriya. We also know that Israel bombed a Lebanese army barrack in southern Lebanon, killing 9 Lebanese soldiers. So really what's happening, and this happens right around this time when I talk to you, Rick, that we see the shelling increase from the Israeli side, we see those airstrikes, and we see a few rockets come out. And it's a bit of bad news that now this is becoming routine. We're getting into that part of this Middle East conflict, these cycles that happen, and many people I talk to on the street here think this is going to last weeks. In fact, Israel said today they think that they will be bombarding Lebanon for a matter of maybe 3 weeks or more.
That was actually going to be one of my questions. You was just, I mean, obviously nobody who lives there is nobody enjoys this. It's horrible. Everybody wishes that this would end. But to some degree, do people just sort of wake up at a certain point and they just sort of accept it, or they just sort of, I mean, do people walk around and just sort of realize that that's part of day-to-day life?
You know, I kind of describe it as World War II mentality in the United States. And before the U.S. entered World War II, before Pearl Harbor, there were a lot of people who didn't want to get involved in Europe, a lot of people very concerned about that. But once the U.S. did enter, it was almost like the mentality changed overnight, and it became a country bent on really resolve to try and fight this enemy. And that's what you have here in Israel with Israelis, that they are, you know, opening their homes. People in the south are opening their homes to people in the north who might be near rocket fire. People are moving down south. They're opening up all their shelters, making some shelters into essential kind of underground playgrounds because there's so many kids up there. So I'd say there's a lot of resolve in Israel. In Jerusalem, it's really quite a contrast. You know, there's a jazz concert going on down the street right here. But in Haifa, of course, people are in and out of shelters, and that's just an hour up the road.
I was going to ask, how far are you, and not to be morbid in any way, but how far are you from where things are really ugly?
Yeah, I'm at least an hour or more away from where the Hezbollah rockets can land. But that hour is key. You know, the rockets can't get past it as far as we know. And that's why people here in Jerusalem feel very safe. They're very concerned. Tourists are pretty much gone. But they can still enjoy an Israeli jazz trio.
All right, and just to close this out with what we in the entertainment business refer to as a callback. Apparently, Macaulay Culkin was in Israel with a friend of his, Mila Kunis, from that 70s show, who then referred to him leaving by saying that Macaulay Culkin, quote, is a drama queen. So there you go. So if anybody should ask, Macaulay Culkin left Israel because he is a drama queen.
Drama queen. All right, I'll leave that there.
All right, so there you go. That's going out on an up there on this grim day. All right, Lisa Goddard in Jerusalem. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
All right, be safe. We'll talk to you soon. There you go. That's Lisa Goddard, CNN radio correspondent in Jerusalem. All right. That is the reach of the Rick Emerson Show right there. Really is a, it's like a big tentacled worldwide monstrosity encircling and ensnaring all nations and peoples. That's what this program is. Oh, and this is, see, now I thought this was the case, but I didn't want to say it earlier. And then, of course, by not saying it earlier, I look like a tool. That Robert Preston, listen to this email. Jesus tap dancing Christ, Rick. Robert Preston was in The Last Starfighter, which I thought, but it's like he's buried under such heavy makeup because he plays Grig, who is the navigator for Alex Logan. Oh, God, now I really am slipping. Well, you know, the kid who lives at the Starry Night trailer park or whatever. Is it called the Starry Night or is it called the... I'm looking at a whole room full of people that don't know.
He says, quizzically.
Turn in your geek card. You have shamed entire... This is written, by the way, in... This is written, by the way, in English. This is written... Rick, turn in geek card. You have shamed entire family. It says... But Robert Preston put on a whole bunch of lizard-like makeup. And then he played... No, he didn't play Grig. Grig was the guy who... Oh, now I'm all screwed. Robert, okay, quit calling. I know what you're calling about. Robert Preston played Alpha Centauri. That's what happened. I know The Last Starfighter. Let's clarify something right now. Robert Preston from The Music Man played Alpha Centauri in The Last Starfighter, who was not a reptile, but who had a weird metallic tissue that he could take his face off with while driving. Grig was played by what's-his-name, who played, never mind.
Thank you.
Who played Joe Kennedy in the Rat Pack movie. Quit calling about The Last Starfighter.
Here's my brain is going to explode.
Here's Tim Riley.
So okay, we have differing peacock reports here. First, we have a report of the peacock at the Oregon Zoo attacking a toddler, prompting the parents to rush into the hospital. The parents say, "We were next to the tigers and the peacock came up. It goes down to grab a piece of purple candy, and my son stepped toward the peacock and it jumped on him and grabbed my son with both with its talons in its shoulders and stuck his beak into the chest."
Oh!
Now this is...
Where did this happen?
This is the Oregon Zoo.
Okay.
This is an allegation, mind you.
The peacock has not been tried.
When it happened, everyone grabbed their kids and picked them up right away.
Let me get this. So the peacock was just wandering around free.
Yeah.
How old was the kid?
We have a 2-year-old Zach who's really traumatized. He kept saying, "Bad peacock, bad peacock."
Okay. And so, but is the kid all right? I mean, apart from the maiming?
Well, zoo officials say the injuries were extremely minor. They say, "We're talking about a scratch that was cleaned and taken care of."
Let me guess, the parents have already found a lawyer.
Well, apparently, it's the boy's fault because it took the piece of candy meant for the peacock.
Well, because, I mean, it's the... Look, it seems to me like it's probably the parents' fault for letting their children get too close to a wild animal in a zoo. I don't care whether it's walking around or not. Birds got beaks, birds got claws. Keep your kid to yourself. It's what God gave you arms for, not so you can wander around holding high-end consumer merchandise and pasta makers.
Well, the zoo security department says, "This little boy saw a piece of candy on the ground. Both the peacock and the boy went for it, and the peacock won."
Yeah, well, there you go. Nature will always beat you, by the way, in the search for candy and the bright, shiny objects. Don't go crossing swords with it with an animal, because you're going to be on the losing end of that equation. But I'll tell you what, that's one kid that's not going to be wandering away and picking up crap off the ground anytime soon. So there you go.
Let the peacock have the candy.
let the Wookiee win. Let the peacock have the candy. Life lessons from the Rick Emerson Show. It's 503-733-2970. Let's see. It's I'm reading these. I'm not going to read this. Just lewd emails about Lisa Goddard in Jerusalem. Not going to read this. I'm not going to sully my brain with those. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, here's more bird news. This comes to us from Ben. Pooping geese have to go. These are Canadian geese, and their population must be kept in check. Apparently, they're in a lake, as most geese would be. And the park district in Bend spent about $4,000 in staff hours to clean up goose poop. More than 750 of these, don't ask me who counts them, probably somebody with a clicker, spend their summers in Bend these days, and one goose can produce 3 or 4 more pounds of goose poop per day. Tracing the adult goose will help managers come up with strategies and how to deal with them and their droppings.
It's like that guy who sits, the same guy who sits at the Bonneville Dam and
counts the
fish as they swim by the red line. But don't you want to talk to that guy and see how long it takes that job to crack your brain in half? All right.
This comes to us from Idaho. The top candidates for Idaho's governor appear together for the first time on the campaign trail. Butch Otter is running against Jerry Brady. They call for the state to create a technology czar to attract new industry to the potato
state. A technology czar in Idaho. That's fantastic.
Well, that plan comes from Butch Otter.
You can always trust a guy named Butch. I think, I tell you this, it was a couple of weeks ago that Laura went to Provo, which is just bad in and of itself, but she drove there, and so I don't exactly know why she chose to do it this way, but I guess to go to Provo, she drove through Idaho. Which just seems, maybe that's just sort of maybe driving through Idaho to go to Utah, that's sort of like swinging two bats in the warm-up circle. You know what I mean? It's like by the time you finally get to Utah, like, well, thank God, at least it's not Pocatello. But she stayed overnight in Boise. And she stayed in this hotel where I swear to God the Two Live Crew was performing. Not at like an arena, you know, or some sort of a club or some sort of a place near. They were actually performing in the hotel. Like that. You know, like when you go into the lobby to get yourself a drink, you know, 1:30 before you hit the sheets, and there's like Murph and the Magic Tones who are singing out the lounge music. The Two Live Crew performing in the lounge of a hotel in in Boise, Idaho, for $5. So there you go. Let's see. Is this Cecil? Hello, sir.
Yeah, Robert Preston. He has one of his best scenes from the movie S.O.B. A doctor who is going to go give Julie Andrews' character a shot so she'll relax.
Yeah, the Blake Edwards film.
Loretta Swift, who's a reporter, is not allowed on the set, and she calls him a shyster. He turns around deadpan and says, "Madam, I could sue you for slander. A shyster is a disreputable lawyer. I'm a quack."
Yes, there you go. Thank you. No, Blake Edwards. Is Blake Edwards dead? No, he's alive.
He's alive.
He's alive. Oh, that's right, because they honored him at that the Academy Awards a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. All right, thank you, Cecil.
Take care.
All right. I'm never gonna address The Last Starfighter again. You know, and I've been quoting that movie on this show for like the better part of a decade. And then I mangle the whole cast list. And just never talk about it again. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, using Barry Manilow's music to drive loiterers out of a Sydney neighborhood is apparently working a little bit too well. Australia's Daily Telegraph newspaper says the mellow sounds are also making residents want to flee. A month ago, residents of the city's Rockdale district received approval to broadcast Manilow's songs in an area on a trial basis in an effort to keep boisterous youth from hanging out there. 4 weeks into the six-month program, the kids are gone, but those living amid the music say it's driving them absolutely nuts. They're complaining it's too loud and disruptive, and they can't hear their TVs or sleep through it. City Councilor Bill Stravonsky says authorities have received many complaints that the Manilow Serenade is irritating. And even he admits, quote, "I can't swallow some of the tracks like Mandy." But he also notes it's been effective and calls Manilow our secret weapon. Officials agree, though, to turn the volume down.
They're boisterous youth. This is like when, it's just like when they were trying to get Manuel Noriega out of the house, and they were playing AC/DC and the voice of, you know that, Clyde's told that story on the show before, hasn't he? How he actually did, this is one of those things that Clyde tells you that isn't crazy and made up, that Clyde actually performed the voice of Manuel Noriega for... Because Clyde really does an uncanny, Clyde's voice turns up in the weirdest places. It's not just that Moneyville exhibit, and it's not just the weird animatronic parrot that greets you when you go to gamble in Atlantic City. When Manuel Noriega, was in that house and they were trying to blast him out, they did a couple things. They had an endless loop of like rock music. It was like AC/DC and Motorhead and Metallica and whatever the government was using. And they actually, Clyde got a call from somebody who knew somebody. They were looking for a voice guy. Because if you work in radio, that's one of the side avenues for income is to do voice work. And you can either be one of those guys that says, "You're listening to Rock 109 or, you know, you can do whatever. Clyde got recruited by a guy who knew they were looking for a voice guy because Clyde did a really good Manuel Noriega impersonation, and he speaks Spanish. And so Clyde recorded a lot of tracks in Spanish in which he is saying things like, "Hello, this is Manuel Noriega. I like to have sex with small boys," which they then put on the tape between rock songs, and they looped outside Noriega's palace as they were like, so somewhere there is probably footage of the military gathered outside Manuel Noriega's house and the voice of Clyde Lewis talking about pedophilia. So there you go. So just while away many hours on the internet looking for that.
Whatever became of him? Oh, yeah. I mean, he was sent to prison and never heard from again.
I don't know. Whatever. I think about a lot of those guys. Like, whatever happened to the free men? You know the free men in Montana?
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Whatever happened to the Branch Davidians? Where are those guys all at?
I don't know.
Remember the Branch Davidians? David Koresh was dead, but the Branch Davidians, they were all in the news for day after day after day after week after week.
Whatever happened to all the kidnapped white children?
have no idea.
It was an epidemic.
Did they ever find that chick in Aruba? Isn't that Natalie, what's her name?
Natalie Holloway.
Why do I even know her name?
I don't think they did.
It's a missing white girl. Yes. So they never find any. They never find anybody. They ever figure out who killed Chandra Levy?
No.
No, the media's got attention deficit disorder on these things because they wave the story around and then they never complete anything.
Well, it's like the television ghost show. They go looking
with
for
Jennifer Joseph's Love Hewitt?
No, it's somebody else. It's some British girl whose hair is cut really short, and some other guy, and they go traveling around looking for celebrity ghosts, and they never find them.
Oh, this is like a non-fiction program.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of The Ghost Whisperer.
It's a reality-like television program. And they never find them, but they seem to get another budget to do another show every week.
Isn't that a real show, The Ghost Whisperer, with Jennifer Love Hewitt?
It was. I don't know if it's still on the air.
I have no idea. Rick, are you and Sarah going to be playing the Five Phrases of Doom for the David Cassidy interview? Don't miss the comedic opportunity. It could be better than Carrot Top. Seize the day.
That would break Scotty's little heart, though.
Scotty, can I just tell you that Scotty has been so excited about this David Cassidy interview. We were talking about this at the top
of
the
show.
It's
weird. It seems like he's faking it because he is so into David Cassidy.
Well,
it's bizarre.
You wouldn't think that anybody really could be this excited about David Cassidy. David Cassidy.
No, he never talks back, and that was the only time he's just like, Sarah,
see,
it's
you don't
David
know.
Cassidy.
Don't you dare downgrade him again.
No, that's totally. That's exactly
it
what
was
it was.
That tone of voice. It was weird.
No, it's like he really got, I don't want to say the phrase uppity, but he really, like, he got to kind of just back up about it a little bit. And I was like, you know, it doesn't matter if it gets canceled, it's just David Cassidy. Don't say that. He's not just David Cassidy. He's David Cassidy. And then he sort of walked off in a huff to make coffee. So, but the day, but here's the thing, is that the David Cassidy interview may not be happening because
he's a very busy man.
Okay, now that's another phrase.
He's doing a ribbon cutting at a strip mall, for all you know.
He's holding a huge cardboard pair of scissors somewhere, cracking a bottle of knee-high over the bow of a boat. No, but that's another phrase
Welcome
I got this
to
morning.
The new supercuts.
When I was talking to Scotty this morning, he's like, no, he's actually amazingly busy. I mean, he's a one-man entertainment machine.
Oh.
No, but we should tell people why we're talking about this, because for like 3 days now, we have had this David Cassidy interview. In fact, longer than that, because this was even before, this was pre-Cool in the Gang, wasn't it? We had this David Cassidy interview booked because he's playing at Chinook Winds, when we all went to see, when Tim McClellan and I went to see Rickles a couple, like 3-4 weeks ago, there was a whole coming two nights, David Cassidy. And the next thing we knew, Scotty had been like, David, I am on that. And that's before we knew the awesome guest booking power of Scotty J. And he just came in and announced, he's like, hey, David Cassidy's booked. Get ready for the interview of your life, Rick Emerson. And so all over, like, the last 3 days, Scotty J, every day in his head, he's had, like, a little counter. You know, those little flash counters that are all over the internet counting down to the Snakes on a Plane premiere. Yeah. Scotty's had one of those in his head counting down to the David Cassidy interview today. He's prepared a 45-second custom intro for the David Cassidy interview segment. He's prepared a list of questions. I don't think I brought it in with me, but he printed out like an 80-page dossier so I would know what to tell, you know, what to speak to Mr. Cassidy about. And then, the best part of the entire thing is, he booked the interview for 1:20 today. 1:20 Eastern. Zing!
Oh, no.
It's wrong to laugh. So apparently, Scotty... So, hold on, did he... Scotty... So did David Cassidy actually call your cell phone?
He did, and he sounded a bit...
Come here. You have to tell us the story. No, this is fantastic.
So here he goes back to the smoky back room to do this deal.
All right. So just use that microphone there. So what happened? So David Cassidy called your phone this morning?
Yes, he called...
Is that because he called here and nobody answered?
He called here several times, he said, and then nobody answered, and so he called my cell phone. And
he began weeping silently to himself and whatever.
Sound a bit agitated?
Perturbed.
Branson hotel room he's in.
Yeah. Perturbed.
And so what was the message on your... Did you answer, or did he leave you a message?
He left me a message.
And what did do you still have it?
I still have the message.
Can you play us the message?
I got to figure out how to get it off the phone.
Can't we...
Hold up the microphone.
Yeah, you just hold it up to the...
Or else you can check your...
Okay.
You can check your message.
Well, we'll do it next, like later, next hour. We'll have you play back the message from David Cassidy. So he was...
Cold.
Was he annoyed? He was irritated?
It sounded a little bit.
Did he say, do you know who I am?
I'll just... Yeah, he goes, this is David Cassidy and
you don't,
Scotty. And I'll just keep trying your hotline, I guess.
Oh.
And then he kind of clicked...
Okay. What when? Let me ask you this. What feelings went through you as you listened to the David Cassidy voicemail on your cell phone?
That Rick is going to rip me on the air this afternoon?
No, it doesn't matter to me.
No, it's more lost more than anybody.
Seriously. I'm not the one who referred to him as the consummate entertainer.
He is.
Okay, why would you say that? What is David Cassidy? Let me ask you this, and
he's
I don't mean this.
He's taking time out from a room full of 50-year-old women to do this.
could be performing at the opening of a Kenny Rogers Roasters somewhere. Let me ask you this, and this question comes from the heart. This is a sincere question. What does David Cassidy do?
Okay, well, this all started, you know,
How is it that you became such a big David Cassidy fan?
I'm really not a huge David Cassidy fan.
Now, don't try to backpedal now.
I admired him more when I saw him in EFX in 97.
What is EFX?
It was just a phenomenal...
Is that like a late-night porno channel?
It was a phenomenal show in Vegas that they do a ton of singing, and he was, like, flying around in some machine in the air, and it was just...
Will he be flying during the interview today?
I do not believe so.
I hope he's not flying to the suburbs.
Secondly, he's a stud. He got all the chicks when he was on the Parsons Family.
He's a stud.
Right?
I mean, he probably still gets those same chicks after two or three marriages.
I saw you when I was 16.
Yeah, the sad part about that whole Partridge Family thing.
Hooking up with the Selma Bouviers of the world. Yes.
The whole Partridge Family thing made over $500 million, and he got like 15,000 of it.
No, he's a bitter bastard. Have you read his book?
I have not read his book.
Oh, man. See, I've read his book. Come on, get happy. Every other page. Look, I'm not saying that the guy didn't get screwed. I mean, that's how it works in the recording industry. You get the shaft. But every other page, he's either bitching about being broke. here's what David Cassidy's book is. David Cassidy's book is complain about father, complain about being broke, tell story about having underage sex. Rinse, wash, repeat. That's it for like 189 pages. That's what the book. It's like Geraldo's book. Have you read Geraldo's book? Geraldo Rivera wrote this book called Exposing Myself, which he put out after.
Good Lord.
No, he put it out after the Al Capone's vault thing, because I guess he figured there was nowhere to go but down, and so he's like, I guess I better cash in while I can. So Geraldo cranked out this book, and the entire book. I mean, it's like reading a long, elaborate penthouse forum collection. You know, and then I dated Bette Midler, who wanted to have sex by the side of the road in Vegas 18 times in a one-hour period. And just endless sexual exploits and travails. And that's what David Cassidy's book is like. And then he did the only other thing I know about David Cassidy is that he did that horrifying photo shoot for Rolling Stone where he posed nude and you could see his business.
Oh.
You didn't know about that?
No.
There's a legendary photo that he took because he did. See if you can spot this cycle. Because he's in a prefabricated teen pop band, but he, fill in this, see if you can complete this sentence. But he wanted people to take him.
Seriously?
There you go. So what's the way to do that? Wave your tackle around in Rolling Stone. Like, nobody wants to see that. Imagine you're some guy and you've just dropped a bunch of acid and you're going to read about Jimi Hendrix and it's David Cassidy's private hairs being exposed to the pages of... See?
Ooh.
And that look on your face...
Could be worse. It could have been Danny Bonaducci.
I suppose. So...
Yeah, he's the guy that had the drug problem, I believe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I'm sure that David Cassidy's led a clean life. I'm sure he's led a monastic...
The milk and cookie diet.
David Cassidy's led a monastic existence, I'm sure. So, all right. So, there you go. So is David Cassidy going to be calling the program today?
I don't believe so.
Oh, come on. After all of this build-up.
I thought you were a can-do producer.
I got a hold of
his people. Does he require more than one person?
Multiple people?
Yes.
Was it him pretending to be another person?
The problem is...
It's just some Broadway Danny Rose guy.
I will admit it's completely my fault because the...
No, that is true.
Gal booking him is in California, so I never thought twice about him being in a different time zone, and there you go. So she said he might be able to make it today, tomorrow, or the next day.
Did she mention what else he might be doing that's going to conflict with him calling our show?
He already had three radio interviews today beyond ours.
Who else is booking David Cassidy?
Bunch of people.
There's nobody.
Altoona, Duluth, and Bangor, Maine.
And Goomba Johnny.
Seriously, there's nobody. Here's the thing is that most of the stations that would care about talking to him have no live DJs anymore. There's anybody at Charlie that can talk to him. So, all right, well,
recently you wrote and directed The Rat Pack is Back out of Vegas, and it became a huge success. And so...
Are you quoting David Cassidy's PR copy from memory?
No. I just was looking at some of the stuff. And so he's getting back from the fact that he didn't get paid well on the Partridge Family.
He's not getting back from anything.
No.
Because he just sued the people that were trying to steal the show that he wrote, and they came to an agreement, like, last week or something like that.
It is so unnerving that you know this much about it. You really see...
Well,
now,
there is public outrage.
No, people are up in arms. This is this really is an interview that you ought to do.
One thing that I can say is seeing him live in a performance. The guy rocks. I mean, take a look at this picture here.
David Cassidy may be have an energetic performance.
Very energetic.
He may do many things, but among those things, rocking is not to be found. In no way or shape or form does David Cassidy rock.
I believe the term was chicken rock back then.
Yeah, seriously. Is this him with David Hasselhoff?
That's in the Rat Pack.
Oh, yeah, he's coming back, too.
I wonder about this, does David Cassidy play Frank Sinatra in this?
No, Bobby Darin.
Oh,
Sammy Davis.
Yes. do you wonder if there's people in a room somewhere who decide who's going to come back and who's going to become some bizarre sort of ironic icon?
He actually wrote and directed all this, so he's making his own work out there.
He's making his own luck.
I think it's a woman at Entertainment Weekly who does the Who's In and Who's Out this week.
It's Lisa Schwartzbaum. Yeah. I think about that with Christopher Walken. I mean, because Christopher Walken is...
He can come back.
Christopher Walken is not a bad actor. He does have I would say a bit of a limited range, and again, I'm not trying to bust on Christopher Walken, but Christopher Walken has
a gimmick?
He's like Robert De Niro. He has one thing that he sort of does. Christopher Walken really is a glorified character actor, and I'm not trying to dog him. He's a good actor, but I'm saying he doesn't have a tremendous amount of range, in my assessment anyway. But at some point, somebody just waved a wand somewhere, and they decided that all guys between the age of 25 and 40 would love Christopher Walken. I don't know why it was. They just decided that it was going to be the case. Same thing with Chuck Norris. You realize that sometime like in the last 18 months, somebody pushed a button in a room somewhere, and suddenly every 29-year-old white guy you know has to go on and on about how great Chuck Norris is. I'm not saying Chuck Norris isn't great, but I'm saying it's like somebody's... What's that scene in The Devil Wears Prada, which I do not believe I'm now quoting, but that Meryl Streep is... Yeah, that whole thing about somebody in a room 2 years ago decided that you would buy this sweater and you do not even realize it. You basically,
yeah.
Somebody somewhere 2 years ago decided that all 30-year-old white men would start talking about Chuck Norris and how great he is. I don't know why. It's just happened. Same thing with David Hasselhoff. Suddenly David Hasselhoff is everywhere and we're obliged to make comedic references to him and post YouTube videos extolling his virtues like 8, 9, 10 times a week. That makes sense. The whole thing's just mystifying to me.
Well, I would like to comment on the Christopher Walken thing. Didn't he just recently do a bit with the Blue Oyster Cult and on Saturday Night Live?
If by recently you mean many years ago.
With the cowbell.
Yeah, can we
more cowbell?
Can we interview the
that?
Cowbell? All right, take this David Cassidy material away.
Thank you,
Scotty.
Take it away. Thank you, Scotty. It's too bad he tried so hard.
Get it out of my sight. Well,
it
you
just
know,
breaks your heart.
Sometimes
he's
going
to learn. This is full of disappointment each and every day.
Being turned down by David Cassidy. Oh, there's really nowhere to go from there. Oh, we didn't even get to the Snuffwatch.
Our cume.
we'll never convert that cume to corn now. Okay. It's 503-733-2970. Sarah's arching her eyebrows and mouthing the words, "We have to break." Sarah's giving me what I call the indulgent smile right now.
So is there a plan B in case this didn't happen?
The plan B is that we break, okay, and then we come back and we talk about other crap.
And listen to Scotty's cell phone message from him.
Yes.
It'll be just like an interview.
I think that's...
Close your eyes, it's like you're there in the front row. Scott, Sarah gives me that look sometimes. It's the look that you might give, I don't know, a sort of bright but retarded child that you don't really understand but sort of have to be around. That's what that look was just now. All right. Hey, we're going to break. Coming up later on, top 5 songs about being a rock and roll star. Ed McCarthy, Jim Roop. We'll find out who else is on Scotty's upcoming guest list that he will book and then fail to close. It's 503-733-2970. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Stay right there.